Hey, welcome to Night School, and this is episode 45, number 45, and we're really quickly catching up to the main Every Night's a School Night show now. That one's at 56 going on 57, and here we are at 45 with Night School. It's almost like they're in competition with each other, like my two podcasts are in a race with one another. But if it is a competition, it's a collaborative competition. Like I talked about in the last episode, collaborative competition. Why don't I just combine them? I should just combine the shows, and that way I could be bragging about how I've done over 100 podcast episodes. But no, I got to keep them separate and compartmentalized like everything else in my life. But what's happened? What's going on? Oh yeah, it's the new year. Because, you know, you can't do anything. You can't have a new episode of anything. You can't have anybody talk about anything current without mentioning it's a new year. Because so much has changed. You know, so much has changed over that one-day span. The number has changed just ever so slightly. But it's amazing. That, to me, is like just a form of magic. The fact that you can just change that number. One day has gone by, and suddenly everybody's in this totally different mindset. They're giving themselves these, I was going to call them New Year's initiatives. What are those called again? Resolutions. Low resolution resolutions. People are all thinking about that. And even if they don't do them, even if people don't follow through, which many people don't, not to be negative about it, but people don't. Because if you're going to do something, you're just going to do it. Even if it's been nagging at you for a long time, you're going to do it. You're going to do it before the new year hits, even if it's just the day before. You got to start immediately if you're truly going to do something. And of course, there are tons of people who probably do things when the new year starts and they stick to it. But I think just as a general rule, if you're going to make a change or just do something meaningful in your life, you tend to just do it when that window opens up and your brain is like, I need to do that. And the little number change doesn't really matter. But I still recognize the power of that, how just that little change, that little, when that clock changes, people do start thinking differently and trying to act differently. And even if they don't act the way they want, even if they don't start changing their behavior in the way they want to, they still start acting a certain way. Something still changes in their behavior. Even just writing down a different number and thinking about just their entire life in slightly different terms because 1 year has gone by. You know, and there's a little lie we kind of tell ourselves. Like, we kind of jump ahead. I was thinking about how I could start saying this show has been around for 6 years when really it's just been around for 5 years and a month. But because that number changed, you can still get by on some technicality and be like, we've been around for 6 years. And people do that with things. They just kind of take the whole year that's yet to come and, you know, throw it into the mix. But it is funny how we do that. It is funny how we just, you know, this little day changes and we're just like, here, everything's different. We got to talk about it. And even I'm talking about it right now. And so that shows you how powerful it is that as much as I don't want to talk about the new year because I don't think anything has changed, here I am going on and on about it. But one thing that has changed is I'm in a Fila suit. What I mean by that is I'm in a matching sweatsuit, like a light gray Fila sweatsuit. It has the Fila F logo, red and white on the breast. It's on the breast. And the gray pants match the sweatshirt. No hoodie, because that's too cool. It's too cool to have a hooded sweatshirt with matching gray pants. It's better to have one that has no zipper, no hood, just a standalone long sleeve sweatshirt. It's almost like a thick shirt. Not quite a sweatshirt, it's just a thick shirt. And I got sweats on, and I haven't worn sweats in years. I bought a pair about a month ago, but they didn't match any, you know, they didn't match any sweatshirt. It was just a pair of dark blue speckled sweats. I don't know what's up with that. They're speckled. Speckled sweats. I don't know, man. They are. They are speckled. Yeah, it feels good to be wearing this Fila sweatsuit, this light gray. Because wearing like a black one or a dark blue one or even a dark gray wouldn't really feel as good to me. But being in a light gray one, this is what guys wear in the prison yard. If you've ever seen those group photos of guys in prison, they are always in light gray sweatshirts. No hoods, no zippers. They're wearing exactly what I'm wearing right now without the Fila logo, because it turns out Fila doesn't sponsor prison issue clothing. And those photos are so cool. Like when you see just a group of guys, I'm interested in the mafia, so I'll come across some photos of a group of mafia members in prison hanging out together, and they're all in the gray outfits, and I'm always just like, I want to be like them. So maybe that's why I'm wearing this. It also kind of fits with just my, like, I don't know, just fits with where my mind is at to be dressing like this these days. Next, it'll be tracksuits. It'll actually be the striped tracksuits, but hopefully designer quality. Is it Velour? I don't know the name of the brand, but the ones that are really comfortable and they're lined. Because I used to have a pair of just warm-ups that I wore in PE in junior high, and they were just like this. They were Adidas or something, so it wasn't like they were the cheapest of brands, but they were just this thin material where if you even like slid your knee on the ground, it would rip this nasty burning hole in them. A nasty burning hole. Well, if you wear your speckled sweats, you know, you won't get any nasty burning holes. Yeah, with those prison photos, they just look so cool. And there was that trend over the last few years that kind of hip people have done where they'll pose, where in a group photo, they'll pose and they'll be kneeling with their, like, kind of shaking someone else's hand. Not really shaking another person's hand, but it's like, you know, like two hands gripping each other, like... The best example I can think of is the movie Predator when Dutch meets, the black dude. I can't think of his character's name right now, but when they meet for the first time, when they reunite for the first time, they just like, it's almost like an arm wrestling maneuver, but it's more like a handshake. And those prison photos, Carl Weathers, that's his name. I can't remember his character's name, though. But it's like this, like, kind of like handshake, arm wrestling sort of maneuver that makes you look strong. And, like, so people in prison and in gang group photos, they'll always be kneeling doing that. It's almost like we've made a pact. That's kind of what it signifies. It's like we're allies. It's like we're not friends. We're allies. And so hip people, you know, cool people, you know what they're like. Hip and cool people. They were... taking these photos, group photos, where they were doing that, where two of them would be kneeling and they'd be doing that. And I've seen probably 100 photos like that. It's like a serious trend over the last few years. And I get it, because that maneuver, that whatever that pose is really powerful and cool. But I've seen so many pictures like it that it's not really cool anymore. So I can't do that. You know, I don't feel like I can, you know, it's become too cool for me. So instead, I'm just going to wear a sweatsuit around and kind of try to capture the same vibe. But yeah, what else is there? This episode's going to be about waiting lists. I guess I'll just jump into that. No smooth segue, no speckled sweat, smooth segue there. Just purely jumping into it. And what got me thinking about it was I was thinking about nice things my mom tried to do growing up to try to shelter me from cruel realities. And an example that came to mind was when I was a kid, one of my cats died. He had been our cat since before I was born. He was older than I was, and he died. And, you know, one of those early experiences of your cat dying, of your pet dying, it's horrifying. I mean, it's always horrifying, but still, just when you're a kid, it's like, especially a cat who has always been there since before you were born. That's not just a pet, that's an institution in your household. And this cat died, Joey, and so we went around to some different places to try to find a new cat. I think pretty soon after, you know, sometimes you want a little grieving period, but sometimes, you know, especially when you have a little kid, you want to get another cat soon. Not that I know what it's like to have a kid and to have to replace that kid's cat, but anyway, we went to a shelter at one point, and there were all these beautiful cats. I love all cats. So we were checking out these cats, and, you know, many of them were older. And it was some sort of like, almost like an open house where it wasn't just like one or two people coming by the shelter. It was like some sort of open house event where everybody happened to be there checking out cats. So there were tons of people. And there was one older cat I remember I liked, but it was a little older. And I had it in my head that I wanted a kitten. Because, you know, I think I was maybe in fifth or sixth grade. I don't know. So not tiny, but still young. And I was just like, I want a kitten. You know, you just have that in your head. And so we checked out the different cats at the shelter. And there were some older ones I liked, you know, but I had my mindset on a kitten, and they only had one kitten in the entire shelter. And I remember everybody was crowded around it. Everybody was crowded around, and the cat was being extra cute too. It was playing. It was like it knew that this open house was going on, and it was going to make itself just the most desirable thing among desirable things. And we went up and we asked about it. You know, we inquired about the kitten, and the lady working there was like, well, this kitten has a wait list, and she showed us this list, and it was so long. I mean, there were over 20 people, over 20 families, let's put it that way, 20 families who wanted this cat. And that was an early experience for me where I was like, that is so absurd. I remember, like, she had a clipboard that had this wait list of names of people who wanted that kitten. People who came to that shelter and wanted a cat and saw that kitten and thought, I want that kitten. And so there were over 20 families of people with kids like me probably, who really just wanted a kitten. They wanted something that was just young and they could mold it. You know, they didn't want an older cat that was already set in its ways. And just seeing her hold that clipboard, and I could see the kitten behind the clipboard, like it was nearby, and I could see the kitten playing behind it, and I just remember thinking, despite my young age, I was like, that is so absurd. Like, I want that kitten. But, you know, I knew right then, I was like, there's no way we're signing up for that wait list, you know, as if all those families are going to drop off. All those people are going to decide they don't want it before me. Because there are some situations where you do get on a wait list and you kind of know people will drop off. A good example would be when you're calling some sort of customer service, when you're calling Comcast or your telephone, your cell phone provider, and they'll tell you, you know, there's this new thing you can do where you can like leave your number and they'll call you back when they're free. I've never done that because I don't really trust it. And if I'm already committed to the idea of waiting to talk to a customer service representative, especially from a company that I know is going to drive me crazy just talking about what I've got to talk about, if it's a cable or phone company, I've already committed myself to losing my mind in that situation. So I'm ready to just wait. I'm going to wait it out. But anyway, in that situation, they'll put you on this weird little wait list where they'll be like, you're the 20th person in line. And people do drop out of that. People do drop off, and you'll find that suddenly, like next thing you know, a minute goes by and you're the 10th. And then 5 minutes go by and next thing you know, you're the next person in line. And I think because it's not desirable, I think because there's a lot of people who just, they're not excited to talk to that customer service rep. They're not excited to discuss their cable bill and some surcharge that they don't know what the fuck they're getting charged for. They're not excited to talk about that. But people don't do that with kittens. People feel a lot different about waiting to get a kitten than they do waiting to talk to a customer service representative. So, you know, as a kid, I was just like, no matter how much I want that kitten or a kitten, this is absurd. And as I was saying, like just seeing that kitten and knowing that there were like all these like humans with all these thoughts and, you know, all these racing thoughts and, you know, families and homes and the fact that these people are just thinking about that little cat whose mind is just clear. He's just playing. There's all these people in the shelter. The shelter sucks. And there's all these people who are giving him attention and playing with him. And his mind is just clear. And he's ready to go to a happy home, but he's just in that moment. Meanwhile, all these people are like, wait list me. just as a kid, that was an early experience where I was just like, humans are fucking crazy. But we went home. We didn't end up getting any cat at that shelter, and we certainly didn't put ourselves on any kind of wait list. But I remember the next day I expressed some kind of sadness to my mom about the cats at the shelter who, you know, didn't have a wait list. Like, because that's the other, as much as it was kind of like funny, it was absurd in a funny way to think of all these people like pawing at this kitten, no pun intended, clawing and pawing to try to get this kitten, clawing their way to the top of the wait list. As funny as that was, the other side of that is horribly fucking sad, which is that there are all these other cats there that don't have a wait list. They don't even have one person who wants them. And sorry to just bring this down to that level, but that's how I felt the next day. I was like, God, you know, and I'm just as bad. I might have been 11 years old, grieving over my cat who died, the institution who died in my home, but still, like, I didn't get one of the older cats, but I just felt terrible about it. And my mom told me, I think it was like a day or two later, she was like, oh, your sister, she went to the shelter and she followed up on the other cats and they all found homes. You know, because my mom is wonderful that way. You know, as much as some people would be like, my mom lied to me about those cats didn't get adopted. You know, a lot of people would like hold that against their parent. It's coming from such a pure and good place. Your kid is showing this, you know, concern and care for living creatures, and you don't want them to be guilty or sad about it. So she told me my sister went and checked, and all the cats found homes. You know, it's almost like a variation of the whole like, oh, your dog got sick, and we actually took him to a farm. Where he's going to be healthy. He has to live on that farm because he's going to be healthy. You know, your dog went to go live on a farm. It's a variation of that classic lie, that classic lie. But it is. It's a variation of that, you know, because kids get so sad about animals and their pets. They love them for good reason. That parents tell them lies to, you know, soften the reality, the harsh reality that things die. And sometimes in an unfair way, that sometimes cats at shelters get put to sleep because they don't have a wait list. Because after that, I asked my sister, I was like, so mom said, you went to the, my sister ended up working in animal rehabilitation. She's one of the most fiercely, she's one of the fiercest proponents of animal welfare I've ever met in my life. She loves animals, cats to death. She's worked in the business. She met her husband in the animal rehabilitation business. But, you know, so if anybody was going to go check on the welfare of those cats, it would be her. So it was kind of a good lie in that sense. But I asked her, I was like, did you go check on those cats? And she was like, no. I don't know what you're talking about. And I was just like, oh. but anyway, just that idea, kind of like in the last, or might have been the second to last episode when I was talking about meditation and how sometimes I can't clear my mind as much as I want to and thoughts sneak in. But it's interesting when you're just isolated with your thoughts like that, how you'll see links between your thoughts, almost like Wikipedia articles where you can trace back the linked text. Like, oh, I was thinking about that because I was thinking about this other thought, and there was this one fragment of that first thought that linked to that other thought. And you know, if you isolate yourself, you know, where you don't have any sensory input, you can really trace that chain of thoughts. So sort of in that sense, I was thinking about, you know, my mom telling me that gentle, soft lie so that I wouldn't cry over shelter cats. But that brought me to just the idea of wait lists, just the whole concept of wait lists. And, you know, we do put ourselves on wait lists for things we really want. I think about a class that I really wanted, a program that I wanted in college, and I put myself on a wait list. And then, but you're in this weird situation where you've invested in the idea, like, I want that program. That's going to be my life, but it's full, so I'm going to put myself on a list. And that is a situation kind of like the customer service situation where people do tend to drop off and you do tend to rise up on the list. But some weird technicality happened. I remember when I wanted that program where I went to go sign up for another class, but in the weird window of time, it only really could have happened in this 5-minute window of time, this weird turn of fate where where I actually ended up getting into that program. Like the computer system, I had somehow risen to the top of the wait list, and then I actually made it into that program. But then I had gone to sign up for this other class, and it wouldn't let me because I had been let into the original class that I wanted. So then I had to like do this maneuver, and it ended up knocking me out of everything. In my attempt to like find a second class and actually get into that, it ended up just like knocking me out of everything. And so I was fucked, and I had to like take these awful night classes. And that was a good lesson. You know, I shouldn't have even put myself on the wait list. You know what I mean? If I did, you know, if I was willing to put myself on the wait list, I shouldn't have then tried to sign up for this other class and then invested in that. You know, it's just a mess. And I feel like we do that with so many things. We put ourselves on these wait lists. It's sort of like with the new year. In the same way that I was saying how when the new year changes over, it's like, oh, something big happened. Something happened. Oh, so much happened in the last few days. So much changed. And nothing has changed. And it's almost like we're waiting for something to happen. I mean, I even feel that way now, even though I'm not thinking about the new year very much at all. meanwhile, I keep bringing it up. But really, when it comes to my day-to-day life, it's like the new year is not affecting my decisions or what I'm doing in any way. However, you know, in some weird way, I feel like I am waiting for something to happen outside of me. Because if you're waiting for something to happen, you're inevitably waiting for it to happen outside of you. Because things don't just happen inside of you without you doing something. You have to make some kind of decision. You have to make some kind of change for things to actually start happening inside of you, even if you don't realize it's a change. But when it comes to waiting for external changes, you know, you're just kind of sitting around. And you're just like, well, you know, I hope something happens. That clock changed over. I hope something happens. And, you know, a lot's going on politically, as always. When is it fucking not? You know, when is something not going on politically? When are people not talking about something? You know, it's like waiting for this other shoe to drop. You know, it's like we waitlist ourselves in so many ways. And we do it with romance, we do it with love, we do it with work, we do it really in every possible way that we can. We kind of sit around waiting. And I think learning how to wait is a good quality. If you're going to do something, don't think about running. Don't be like, well, I'm going to run now that it's the new year. Learn how to wait better. Learn how to wait better. And don't wait before you do things like running. Don't say, I'm going to do it on this day. Just start doing it. The second you have time, start doing it. If you want to start exercising or making some sort of positive life change, if you want to stop drinking, that's something I'm like at 13 months now, a little over 13 months without drinking. I could say 14 months because the month changed over. And I could take credit for the whole month because the month changed. In the same way that I could take credit for a whole year because the year changed. No, but being 13 months sober from drinking, you know, I recognize that I wouldn't have been able to do that if I had been like, oh, I'm going to wait another week. I recognize that I had a window of time where I was able to make that decision, and I had to make that decision right then. I couldn't just procrastinate for another week, even if I didn't drink in that meantime. You know, even if I hadn't drank for the next week, or for the next month for that matter, there was still a certain point in time where I had to make that decision. It's almost like that's when that's when it was hot. That's when something was glowing. And I had access to that glowing thing. And so I couldn't wait. And so that's true for pretty much any kind of positive life change and many things for that matter. I mean, fortunately, you know, if you do want to go down a negative path, the window of time is way more open. Because you can pretty much do any kind of shitty thing to derail yourself or change your life for the worse at any given time. And while you could say that about making positive decisions, there are some that you just have to do in this certain window of time, or the momentum is not going to be there. The glow is not going to be there. You think about movies where someone, you know, casts some kind of spell. I don't know what happens in Harry Potter, but I imagine there's probably some point in time where there's like a glowing doorway, and the only time he's going to be able to open that doorway is when it's glowing, when the the outline of that door is glowing. That's the only time he's going to be able to open it. I know that probably doesn't happen in Harry Potter, but maybe it does. I don't know. There's a part in The Hobbit, in The Hobbit book. I haven't seen the movies, but in the book version of The Hobbit, where, you know, they can only open the cave door when it's a certain day of the year and the moon is shining directly on the door. There's some, like, just moment in time, and it's the only time, and they just happen to get there in time. It just happens to be that night, and the moon shines on the door in that moment. And then they still have to do stuff. They still have to figure it out from there, and it's not easy. But at the same time, I think, you know, when you do make a big decision in your life, it's sort of like that. You know, you do have to be there at the right time. The moon has to be shining on it. And then you still have to do a bunch of work. So it's not fun. It's not easy. You know, those hobbits, whatever his name is, Bilbo and the dwarves could have just jumped off the cliff at that point. They could have been like, this door, way too much work just to get into a dragon's cave. Oh, great. We're going to open this door, and then we're going to go down a tunnel into a dragon's cave. And he's killed everything throughout this entire land. Because that's what happens, is like they get to this door, and it's been their goal. It was marked on the map to get to this door, and then to even read the instructions on that map, because the map had these instructions that were written about that door, but to even read the instructions, you had to hold that map up to the moonlight on an earlier certain day. So everything had to be right in the planning as well as the execution. Everything had to align just perfectly. And, you know, quitting drinking or making any kind of decision, deciding to start doing something healthy, it's not that hard. You know, you don't have to, like, look at it in the moonlight on a certain day and then get to that place on another certain day. And then, you know, it doesn't work like that. But still, I think there is a certain window of time when you have to do something and you can feel it. You can really feel when that window is there. And maybe for some people that is the new year. I don't know. But there's a lot of people who waitlist themselves. There's a lot of people who are like, I'm going to put my name on that wait list and then just hope that something happens, hope that my life changes. And in some ways, I'm still doing that. You know, I hesitate to get on too heavy of a self-help tangent, even though it's pretty much a constant on my brain at this point, just because it's kind of fun and interesting to think about. But it's not like I'm living some perfect life. There's still a lot of blocks that need to be laid down, a lot of work that needs to be done, a lot of moonlight that needs to be cast down on me, and opportunities that I need to find and take before I feel like I can really talk with any authority about this stuff. But at the same time, I have observed these things. I have experienced them to some degree, even in small ways. You know, if your life has changed at all, that's something. And but none of it has happened through sitting on a wait list. That said, you have to learn to wait. And I think that's a crucial distinction in all of this, is that you have to be willing to wait, and you have to learn how to wait, and you have to find ways to make waiting, you know, less insufferable. Because it just destroys us. We hate waiting. You think about a waiting room, and that's hell. Hell is a waiting room. You know, we talk about purgatory like it's a waiting room. Well, to us, to humans, hell is a waiting room. It doesn't matter how many magazines they have in the doctor's office waiting room. It doesn't matter if you have your phone. It's hell just sitting there. You know, I don't even look at my phone in the waiting room. I don't look at the magazines. I just sit there. And I've learned how to wait. And I don't know. I feel like I was able to unlock something in my brain that's made that a little easier. Time has seemed to go by faster. And I hear that as you get older, time just goes by a lot faster. Like years go by and in a span of months, it feels like just a couple months have passed. But I feel like the same way about minutes and hours and all of that. So I feel like waiting rooms are way less excruciating than they used to be for me. And I hate them. Just because they're less excruciating doesn't mean I hate them any less. But I still find them, you know, a little easier to deal with. It's almost a form of meditation, as much as I hate to say that, as silly as I feel actually saying that. I feel like being able to sit there in a waiting room, and I don't close my eyes, you know, I don't close my eyes or act like I'm some, like, in some Zen place when I'm sitting in a waiting room, but I do find that it's a good opportunity to kind of, like, just sit. And just being able to sit is important. It goes hand in hand with waiting. When we're waiting around, we like to sit. We sit. And sometimes when you're waiting, you can find other stuff to do. But there is a value to just learning how to wait. But you don't want to put your name on a wait list and go do something else. I think there's a difference between those actions. Well, I would say actually waiting is strangely an action, even though I'm talking about sitting and doing nothing and waiting being some form of meditation. I also think it is an action that you have to learn, but there are weird still actions or still behaviors that are, still to me an action. Stillness is still an action to me. It's a decision, I guess you could say. I like thinking about things in terms of decisions. Incision, decision. Scission. It's got an interesting sense. It sounds severe when you say anything with scission. Circumcision. Decision. Crucifixion. That's a little different. That's a little different. Circumfiction. But I think there's a decision in that, and a decision is an action. So it's like when you've decided to wait, when you've made that decision that you're going to wait, it's almost a relief. You're like, oh, you know, I'm just going to let time pass. Think about that. That's truly letting go, being like, I'm just going to let time pass, and I'm not going to control it. I'm not going to try to control fucking time, something that we created that ultimately controls us, like so many things we've created. Let's create this thing, you know, it's a great measurement system, because time is fucking cool. The fact that we invented it, that it's become as powerful as it is, like I was talking about how just the change of the new year, the magic of that, beyond all the bullshit, beyond all the resolutions, beyond all the, you know, the hype, just the fact that that affects us so much on a social level, on a personal level, the fact that we think about it as much as we do is fucking incredible. And the idea that that is just a microcosm of time as a whole, and that time is affecting us in that same way constantly, in the same way that we make this big deal out of the new year, we make this big deal out of every fucking second, out of every minute. I don't have time. Oh, this much time has passed. Oh, it's your birthday. It's, you know, there's no way I could list every single way that time blows our minds, you know, on a daily basis. I'm off work. Oh, it's 4:30. The bell rang. I'm at school and the bell just rang. That means it's 4 o'clock and I get to go home, because I go to one of those weird schools who keeps us here until 4 o'clock. The studies show that teens need to sleep in. Teens need to sleep. So time just, you know, blows us away constantly, and the fact that we make a big deal out of the new year is kind of funny. It's almost like the kitten. It's the way that we make a big deal about the new year is almost like those people at the shelter making this huge deal, putting their names on a waiting list for this little kitten who just doesn't give a fuck. That's sort of what the new year is. It's that little kitten playing and celebrating, being like, you know, I'm just excited everybody's here. I'm excited that that people are playing with me. And that's sort of what we're doing when there is a new year. We're sort of like, I'm going to play with time today. We're going to celebrate and be happy, and we're going to wear glasses that have the year written across my eyes. Because that's about as playful as you can get. That's truly like the most playful you can get with time itself, is to wear the year across your eyeballs in a pair of glasses that you can only wear for that one moment in time, in the entire history of everything, you know? These glasses are like essentially that moonlight. They're like a joke version of the moonlight shining on the door in The Hobbit, you know? It's like, you can only wear these glasses on this one evening. These glasses are only relevant on this one moment in time. And if you wear them later, it's going to be ironic. So it's not going to mean the same thing. but yeah, so we're essentially like, oh, look at this kitten, this new year kitten. And I'm going to play with it. I'm going to play around with it and make this big deal. And I'm going to make this list of things I'm going to do tomorrow, even though, oh, I'm going to be hungover tomorrow, but I'm going to do them the next day. You know, and so we make this big list of things. We essentially wait list ourselves, you know, every new year. Meanwhile, time offers endless opportunities. You know, really, those windows of time just come. And there's usually not some greater significance. You know, the window of time for you to make a decision usually isn't the window of time when somebody else can make that same decision. There's these little openings that happen in time that are yours as an individual. Yeah, other people can do the same thing. Maybe a bunch of other people are making the same exact decision you're making in that exact moment, but it's still yours. It's still your opportunity, and it's your time to make a decision. It's still your time to get a circumcision. But yeah, wait lists, time, these are big things. And in the same way that learning how to wait is a way of letting go of time and being like, I'm not going to worry about time. I'm just going to let time do its thing. Because still something is happening. Even though time is this human measurement, you know, obviously things change and things move along, and time is measuring something that is going on and changing. But still, learning how to wait is a way of being like, you know, I'm just going to let it happen. And I have things I need to do. It's not like I'm going to stop doing the things I need to do, but I'm just going to not worry about everything in between. And I'm going to do the things I need to do when they happen. But in the meantime, I'm going to learn how to wait. And putting yourself on a wait list is essentially the opposite. It's like, it's essentially saying, I'm going to be as anxious about this as possible. In theory, it's like I'm going to sign my name up and then I can do whatever I want until my name gets called. In theory, that's what you think you're doing. But really, you're just focusing all your energy on this one thing, and you're essentially communicating to the world at large, the universe, whatever the fuck you believe in or want to call it, because you can really call it anything. You're essentially communicating that, like, I want to be anxious about time and this one thing. And this one thing depends on a certain amount of time and, you know, luck and circumstance. And I really want to worry about it. I really want to worry about time and opportunity. And, you know, it would make this thing I want even better if I was really anxious for it. That's essentially what we communicate when we sign ourselves up for wait lists. So that little kitten, needs love. But you know what it also needs? For me to be just anxiously pawing at it, just watching those other names tick down. They call them, hey, you know, you're next in line to get the kitten. You want this kitten from the shelter? This shelter, you put your name down. Oh, no, you don't? Okay. You know, even if you are in that right place at the right time and the rest of the people on the wait list drop off, you have to ask yourself, was it really worth it? Was it worth sitting there on that list, letting my anxiety build, letting my focus go toward this one thing, when really it could have been spread over all kinds of other things? I could have been making all kinds of other decisions. And maybe, you know, a better path would have revealed itself to me. Maybe another animal would have made its way into your life. Maybe you would have made some other decision throughout the year that wouldn't have culminated in this massive pressure on your new year. My family did end up getting a kitten, by the way. We did end up getting a kitten from I don't know if they were a breeder. They had a batch of Siamese kittens, these people who lived in a house. And we got one of those kittens, and they looked exactly like my cat who had died. It was a cat, and I named it Indiana Jones because the one that I got was off exploring and getting into trouble when we were checking it out. So I was like, let's get him, and we'll name him Indiana Jones. And we called him Indy. And he was a good cat. You know, I don't remember a lot about him. even though I was old enough to remember. You know, he was only around for a few years, and he died of some sort of kidney issue, and it was very sad and unexpected. I came home from school one day, and my sister and mom told me that they found him in really bad condition and had to put him to sleep when I was at school. It was just completely unexpected. He was only about, God, about 4 years old, maybe 5 years old. And it was kind of a lesson, though, looking back on it, because in a weird way, even though I didn't put my name on that wait list, my family didn't put our name on that wait list to get the kitten at the shelter, we did kind of try to, you know, skirt around the system, and we found a breeder who got us a cat, and he looked exactly like the one who had died, which makes me think of like these people these days who are cloning their pets when they die, and they think they can replace it. I can replace this animal. And I don't think that's what we were thinking. I don't think we were trying to replace my cat who had died, but in a weird way, that's kind of what we were doing by getting a cat who was identical, the exact same type of Siamese cat, a male. And he ended up dying young. He died early and young, and we ended up getting Simon and Rosie, you know, as kittens. They were rescued, but they were dying, and they were in very bad circumstances. They wouldn't have been playing around at the shelter. They looked terrible. I don't think they would have gotten quite the wait list that other cat had. So they sort of fell into our hands. My sister rescued them, and they were unexpected. And Simon died a few years ago, but they've been a very important part of my life and a very important part of just, I feel like, my personal story. And it's because I don't think they were forced. An opportunity came to take those two cats, Simon and Rosie, and we took them, and they ended up living long, healthy lives with me, despite the circumstances, despite being very sick and being rescued from a barn in the winter. And they were tiny. They were the runts of their litter. They should have died. They should have died, you know, if fate hadn't brought them to my sister. Her boyfriend at the time was buying a really shitty used car from the people who owned that barn, and they happened to look inside the barn and see these cats. You know, and Indy, you know, he was important. You know, I never got super close to him. He kind of did his own thing, and he was important. You know, we loved him, and, you know, he was a nice cat. But at the same time, looking back on it, I feel like we forced it. You know, I would love to look back. I would love to lie. I would love to tell my own gentle lie. In the same way that my mom told me my sister went to the shelter and all the cats had been saved when she hadn't, I would love to say, like, oh, yeah, no, you know, Indy, you know, he was, you know, the closest cat I ever had, and, you know, this and that. But really, it's like my memories of him are a little faint. He wasn't around that long, and he died of some sort of genetic issue. And that doesn't take away the fact that I loved him and he loved us and, you know, he had a good home. But in a way, I do feel like we forced it. I do feel like we skirted around the waiting list for the other kitten, and we got a kitten from a breeder, and that, you know, led to its own little heartache. But not everything has to be that way. And I think as you live your life, you'll find that opportunities present themselves, little windows of time open, the moon shines on things, and when that happens, you know it's time to make that decision. When Simon and Rosie came into my life, it was time to make a decision. The moon was shining on them. And if the moon happens to shine on you when the clock struck midnight on the new year, that's wonderful. Your timing is just perfect. That's a stroke of luck in and of itself. But if it didn't, if you didn't feel the moonlight shining on you when midnight struck, just keep looking for it. Just keep looking for it. And just be warned, there will be a dragon sitting down at the bottom of that tunnel. But you still have an opportunity available.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land. to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me.